Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and let's bring you to another one of Mark Steiner Go to the Maryland Film Festival Conversations. We're going to talk with a homegrown filmmaker, a couple of actors in this film. Matt Porterfield is in the studio. His film is Putty Hill. You remember him from a film festival ago, 2006, when he premiered Hamilton. And now he's premiering Putty Hill at the film festival here. He joins us in studio along with two actors who also happen to be brothers, Dusty and Cody Ray. Good to have you all in the studio as well.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
It's great. Okay, homegrown filmmaker. So I got to ask you this first, obviously. This the little conversation about how you wandered your way into this world of film, because we'll talk about that in a minute or two, but you have your own style.
Mm-hmm.
Belongs to nobody else but Matt Porterfield. So
that's a good thing, I guess.
It is good. But it's your thing. So how did you get into this world?
Accidentally. You know, I grew up here in Baltimore, studied film in New York at NYU. And when I finished school, you know, I was living and working there, teaching, actually.
In New York?
Yeah, mm-hmm. In New York, and writing scripts. But they were all based in Baltimore. So after a few years, just sort of struggling to pay rent and get by in the city, I thought I needed a change and decided to move back to Baltimore and try writing a feature script. So I moved in with my dad in the house I grew up in on Louise Avenue in Hamilton. And I guess, you know, even when I was in New York afar, the neighborhood, the city, was just a big influence on my work. And it remains that way today. You know, I'm really inspired by precise locations, by the physical environment, by the people here in Baltimore. And,
mm-hmm.
and I hope to continue, you know, making films here.
And so this film, Putty Hill, that is going to premiere, well, premiere for in Maryland.
You've yeah, shown Maryland premiere.
Because you've been in other film festivals.
Yeah, we're traveling a bit. Yeah, we had our world premiere at the Berlinale and North American at South by Southwest.
And was well received.
Very well. Mm-hmm.
So now Dustin and Cody, you're both in the film and you're brothers, right?
Yep.
In real life and in the film.
Yep. Sir.
Yep. So now how did you all end up? Because one of the things interesting, you're not actors. I mean, that by profession.
Yeah. Only by hoop.
Yeah. I love doing it, though. It's fun.
You enjoyed it, didn't
yeah.
you? Yeah. I could tell. So first of all, before I ask you about that, because I think it's interesting how that part of it, non-actors doing really good acting in this film, I thought. How did you all hook up? I mean, you didn't know Matt beforehand.
I was actually driving my brothers, Cody and Matthew, to the interview, or tryout, I guess you could call it. And Matt asked me to read a script because he thought I might fit the part. So I read the script and I guess I made it.
Yeah.
As for him.
Likewise.
How did you find out about it in the beginning?
My twin brother Matt, said like, this guy named Matt Porterfield wants to film this movie and he's interested in me. And I told him I got a twin brother and he was like, oh, we'll bring him along too. So we went down and I think my brother had work that day. So me and my older brother, Dustin, just drove down there, sat in line, just read the script and tried out. And he said, we're going to give you a call back. I've heard that before.
But, you've tried out for things before?
No, I mean, just like job interviews, stuff
right.
like that.
Right,
like,
right.
I just like whatever, you know.
Right,
like,
you'll call me back, right?
Yeah, it's all right. So he actually did, and it was pretty tight, and I was all excited, and now we're here.
So, and you make these films, and I mean, most of the people in the film, my guess is, from what I've been reading, are not professional actors.
Yeah. Exclusively.
Exclusively. So tell me why.
Well, when I made my first film, Hamilton, it was, I think, a reason of economy, you know? But it was also an aesthetic choice. I'm inspired by traditions of neorealism and filmmakers who work with non-professionals
mm-hmm.
In very specific environments, you know, to try to capture some sort of truth value, a particular place and time. But I guess I found myself that that it allows for this degree of collaboration and magic maybe that I'm not sure is possible when working with actors that have screen experience. Not sure, because I haven't done a lot of it, and I'm open to it. But since I make films in Baltimore, and I'm interested in the character of Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
it just makes sense for me to work with people that I like, that I think are interesting, who I want to see on screen.
I'll explore that a bit more in a minute. But what was it like for you all then, if you've never acted before, to do this?
I was very nervous, but it was something I always thought about doing, would like to do in the future if the opportunity ever comes again.
Yeah, I have to agree. Always wanted to do it. Never knew how to do it. Before I did a couple, I was just in the background, you know, just like in movies and stuff. And I was like, oh, I wonder how you like get further into it. And I never could find the right person to tell me. And I just wanted to try it. And I was nervous, you know, just trying to memorize lines and get into character. But besides that.
Because you did have to, lines.
Yeah, in the beginning, in a sense, we did. Like, it worked so well because me and him are brothers. So we kind of have, like, we are brothers. So we had that attitude towards each other. But, like, besides that, it was, you know, a little nervous.
So what you were playing in the film, I mean, is it you or is it somebody else? Or is it
it's
a little
us,
bit of both?
But, like, in the aspect of making it up as we go along. Some of it is us, some of it is fiction, basically. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's like both.
Yeah, I'd agree. Because some, like, in the skate park scene, like, a lot of, like 98% of that is true. Like, everything that comes out of my mouth about the people and what's going on down there is
that's real.
It's true. Like, everything is
now, did
real.
Did you ad-lib that or was that in the script?
No, I just ad-libbed it.
Because you were like, that was the part of the film where you were doing the documentaries kind of style,
yeah,
which we'll talk about in a minute. And so you were being interviewed.
Yeah.
So that was just you talking about what you
yeah,
see.
Yeah, in a sense. But like when he got into the character who passed away in the movie.
Yes.
Like it was kind of like I was pretending. Like I just tried to put my life experiences with friends who had died in the same thing.
You have friends who've died?
Yeah, from like drug overdoses and
you do have friends who've died from ODS.
Yeah, or just suicide or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I just tried to take it like that. But at the same time, I didn't really know the character. I just knew of him about coming to the skate park and just, you know, doing all these fantastic tricks. And I always, like, looked up to him in a sense. So it all worked well.
So I'm curious, before we go back to Matt Porterfield, I mean, what do you think of Matt Porterfield's portrayal of your world?
I think it's very interesting how he captures everything. It's truthful. It lets people that aren't in the world, per se, get an idea of what's going on in Baltimore.
Yeah, pretty much.
Behind the scene.
And it's pretty much like on the hits right on the now, you know, the head of the now. It's kind of, yeah, it's real. That's like what really goes on, like on a normal routine for me. Like I see it all day. But like his work is amazing. He kind of gets into that gritty aspect that most people don't really want to acknowledge. In a sense, they do, but, like, it's kind of fabricated. But this is, like, real, so that's what I like and respect about it.
I mean, one of the things that struck me about the film when I watched it the other night was that the world of working-class people, especially the white working-class people in America, is hardly ever portrayed on film. You don't see it,
yep,
you know, at all. It's always rich people on the film or people who live in some other world that most people don't live in.
Yeah, Southern California.
And then people get the, you know, wrong idea about like this one class of people when there's people like us who just live it day by day. So it's crazy.
And that's what you're trying to do here, isn't it? I mean, I mean, it's a conscious thing on your part to tell a story of worlds other people aren't talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right. I don't know why that is, but when we see working class white Americans typically, it's either, you know, they're caricatured, they're, like, violent, they're, you know, it's rarely, for me anyway, I rarely on screen see portrayals that have any degree of accuracy or authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why, but I guess that's something, yeah, that I'm interested in doing.
So, that's what was really fascinated, what the film shows and looks at, and the people in the film obviously were real. They were real people. And you decided to... there's one thing I have to ask about this. I don't know if the copy I have is the final cut. Is it the final cut?
Yeah, it should be. Mm-hmm.
You made some choices with sound, I'm curious about.
Right.
Because usually if I'm watching a film and there's sound coming from another room, it's like there's clarity like it's here. But you made a different choice with sound. Tell me.
Yeah.
But that was... I was thinking about, is that a mistake? Then I said, no, it's not a mistake. This is a conscious choice he's making. Talk about that.
That's something that's come up quite a bit.
I'm sure.
With audiences. You know, for me, the film, like, formally, is definitely an exploration of, you know, the relationship between traditions of documentary and narrative realism. But also, it's an exploration of, like, the subjective and the objective and the way that as filmmakers we use these tools that have effects for an audience, and sound is one of those tools. So throughout we were making decisions, myself, my editor Mark Vives, our sound recordist, and mixer, trying to place emphasis maybe on the distance in some cases between the camera and thus the audience and a subject. For example, the scene where the young girls are walking through the woods.
Yes.
Traditionally, their dialogue would be amplified, but we allow for the sound, the distance between camera and subject and the audio to match. We break that rule later in the scene with Cody and Ian when they're walking across the train tracks. When they cross those train tracks, we follow them. The audio stays with them, which, of course, is a device that allows the audience to focus on what they're saying, but it's not naturalistic at all. So we made choices like that throughout.
How do you think audiences respond to the really naturalistic sound you do?
It's funny. That's one of the things we'd hear over and over again in response to my first film, Hamilton, just how rich the soundtrack was. And I wanted to achieve that again. It was important for me to record a lot of ambience on location, mm-hmm. and important to my sound recordists as well. And then we just sort of build that in the mix. I think it's just this added element that helps to, I just think, create a rich world.
It is a rich world. I mean, I think that one of the things I also love about the film, what we talked about a little earlier, was that the realism of the film, that your community, your friends, people around you, people who would be like the people around you,
right.
or were treated kind of with a real honesty that you don't see often, which I kind of really liked. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Because, you could have done something like this and...
Yeah, pretended.
And pretended, or ended up being not ridiculing, but like looking down as opposed to being looking eye to eye.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Because, a lot of that is, real on a daily basis. You can go down to Carroll Park Skate Park any day and just witness everything I said in the movie. But like I said earlier, it's like I kind of put my own two cents in with the boy that passed away in the movie. Just try to relate it that way. And when we crossed the tracks and went to the store, I've been going to the store for years now. The guy was cool enough to let us actually film in his store. It was all really cool.
Tony.
Yeah, Tony. Tony's a nice guy. Shout outs to Tony.
It's real natural. I like that.
Yeah, I like that part.
For me, it's an issue of respect, If I respect my subjects, as I think filmmakers should, then they should be allowed to share their voice. And I feel like what we did here, which is really special, is created a collaborative atmosphere. At least I hope. So what you see on screen is not just my representation of a certain reality. My subjects are also able to speak and share their version of events,
What do you think that? A couple of questions here. What do you think that the film that you were in and the film that you shot is saying to the world about that world? What do you think it's saying?
Well, personally, it's kind of a touchy subject because when someone passes away, everybody they don't really talk about it really. You deal with it, you cope with it the best way you know how. But, this kind of, just brings to light, kind of what people do when stuff like this happens. You just go through stories, you reminisce and think about, the person who passed away. That's what I personally think about the film. It kind of just brings you to all these different people's point of view and how their life was affected by this young man. So that's what I think. I think it's pretty cool. And a lot of people kind of just, avoid that because it's really real. It's touchy and sad, quite frankly.
Dustin?
Yeah, I feel the same way that Cody feels. It's just really realistic to me how the film turned out. You don't see that too much as far as other films. Basically, everything Cody covered it.
But, and also to me, what I was talking about was just the part of the subtext to me was also watching this, how it was this kind of struggle of what working people go through right. in America that we don't see.
Yeah.
It brings a lot of light to that. I guess people don't realize what's really going on every day in working class America, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It's kind of a struggle, you could say. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard at times. I like how it brings light to that.
So, me too.
Yeah, I have to add something to that. I think that people kind of, like, just on TV and the way TV is so, like, in your face, like, this is this and this is how the world is. Like, it's kind of, like, fake, you know? And, like, a lot of people, like, think that's what life is, and it's not, like, at all. And that's what I like about this movie, because life is not like, oh, you know, I'm on TV, I'm on camera, you know? My life's so horrible. You know, I broke it now. It's kind of like... TV sucks these days, but I'm saying, like, I like this because a lot of movies are, like, really, like, kind of just whack, and it kind of brings it back to, like, the underground. That's why I like it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you were aiming for, Matt.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think there's a diversity of experience in America, and we just don't see its filmic representation. And in Baltimore, which is a city, like lots of cities in the U.S., that's really stratified along lines of race and class and all those things, I think... That, you know, trying to show other voices, other experiences, you know, that are actually not necessarily exceptional or common, you know. Like, I think we're showing a common experience. Even though it's local, it's quite universal, to be trite. I think that's for me is a priority.
Now you all didn't, all the actors in the film, you didn't know them all before you started the film. Correct?
No, correct.
Okay. So the sense of community that was built between the actors that made it feel like a real community was pretty stunning then. I mean,
right.
None of y'all are professional actors, and you were interacting with other people as actors who you didn't know and created the community out of that. Which
I guess
was,
we could all relate to each other in a way. I guess that's how Matt picked everyone out, that we could all intertwine and relate with each other's lives. I guess that's how it all clicked together so well.
And it did.
Yeah. I have to agree with that because, like, at first it kind of, like, felt awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, I think the thing that really set it off was when we all really went out and played paintball. And it was kind of like we really were playing the game, the paintball game. We were shooting each other. And kind of, like, it was fun. It was open.
That stuff hurts.
Yes, it does. But, like, after that, yeah, I got shot in my head several times in that scene. But after that, it was, like, I felt more comfortable. And it was, like, you know, I could, like, actually relate to these kids. And, like, I thought they would be, like, you know, weird like me. But they're actually, like, just normal people. And I think Matt, because he kind of, like, pulled us all together. And it wasn't that hard.
And part of the film, did you want to say about Matt before I ask another question before we...
I was just going to say that. It's cool you mentioned that. That was our first shoot day. You know, I didn't put the schedule together. My collaborator and producer, Jordan, did.
So you didn't put this as a therapeutic idea to put people together?
No.
Like, it just happened, huh?
But I'll have to think about that next time. It has its advantages.
It was cool.
The characters who played, was it Spike?
Yeah.
Who played the tattoo artist, the father, right? His daughter was Jenny?
Yes.
Right, okay. So those two. That scene on the porch... that you did. I had a couple questions about that. One was, again, two non-actors,
mm-hmm.
especially Jenny. It was just such a real scene. Like, so was his. I mean, because it was typical of a father and a guy like that who's not in touch with his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl, was it? The fact that she did such a good job and we're not trained actors.
Yeah, that's a really special scene for me for lots of reasons, but certainly... the performances by both of them, I think, really, really stand out.
Yeah.
On some level, you know, the character of Jenny, played by Sky Ferreira, is an exception in the film, though Sky doesn't have screen experience or acting experience. She is self-aware. She's an aspiring pop vocalist signed to EMI Capital. Like, she knows what she's... You know,
you can
how
see that
to
something about her.
Image.
You can see that in the
She's conscious of, like, how she appears in front of the camera, to a degree, I think. And Spike was the opposite. I mean, they could have come from more different worlds, but they both drew on their own experiences. And Sky made the decision not to meet Spike before the scene. It was all her. She decided she didn't want to see him until we shot it. And we shot the whole day in Spike's interior, in his house. Sky stayed across the street. And when we finally brought her in...
That was Spike's house she was shooting in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, on Hartford Road. And when we finally brought her in, they passed one another in the hallway. She went out to the fire escape. And it had been a frustrating day for her. It took a lot longer than we expected. She was waiting a long time. We'd gotten everything we needed with Spike, with the exception of this final scene. And she was really drawing upon her own emotional experience with her father, and brought all of that to sort of a head in what is, I think, the most overtly emotional performance in the film.
You may also make a conscious decision not to make that into a larger arc in the film, to make that, which could have been like a running story through the film between father and daughter and estrangement and mm-hmm. going to prison and abandoning his kid and trying to...
Yeah, I think it is a theme, but it's kind of a latent theme. You know, it comes up earlier a couple times in their scenes, their separate scenes, and then at the end we do see it again at the wake. They have that interaction.
A different interaction mm-hmm. at the wake.
Yeah.
The wake was very real.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that with people. And
oh, it was real. Yeah, a couple of those people singing there were actually, like, next door, already drunk. And this is, like, mind you, 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, how did these guys do it? And they were, like, drunk and really singing their hearts out. And they did a good job, I have to say.
Yeah, the beer was definitely flowing.
Yes. I have to agree with that.
Well, this has been good, and I really appreciate you guys spending the time to come in. It's really great meeting the two of you.
Appreciate it.
Dustin and Cody Ray both played brothers in the films, are real-life brothers, and it was Matt Porterfield. Good to have you in the studio, meet you for the first time. And
thanks, Mark, for this opportunity.
Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.